You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Mark Helprin is our guest for a special edition of Secure Freedom Radio. We're presenting what should be a national security briefing for the president-elect. And Mark, I had to interrupt you as you were reaching sort of the climax of your point about the asymmetric capabilities of Russia that are developing now in the nuclear arena. Finish your thought, please.
Okay, here's the rub. The rub is Europe. And think of it this way. In 1987, we had 450,000 troops in Europe. Now we have 45,000. We had more than 800, if you count the carrier-borne aircraft, maybe 900 combat aircraft in Europe. Now we have 130, if we're lucky, and they cover wider areas. Meanwhile, while the Europeans have also reduced their defense expenditures and have very little in the way of military force compared to what they had then, meanwhile, the defense perimeter of NATO in Western Europe alone has increased by 83%. Putin sees this as what it is, which is weak. The idea of the successors to the Soviet Union are to regain the former empire. He could regain the Baltic republics in a second. The only thing stopping him from that kind of move, because conventionally they're in the center and we are spread out and we are weak. NATO is weak and it's breaking its sword in other areas of the world, from Afghanistan to Africa to the Middle East. The historical Russian and Soviet aim is Western Europe, and it's becoming more and more possible for a conventional war, which could not be deterred in a nuclear sense because of Russia's nuclear modernization build-up and aggressive doctrine. And in addition, they've kept their tactical nukes.
Kept them and modernized them as well. Mark Helprin is our guest. We're visiting with him about the Russia that is going to challenge Donald Trump and the United States in the days ahead. And Mark, the key point, it seems to me, from what you're saying, is that unless a very different calculus takes hold with Vladimir Putin, we could well see things perhaps on the basis of miscalculation or on the basis of a series of chess moves that simply go terribly awry, conflict of the old-fashioned kind in Europe. Is that what you're saying?
As I was saying, we, in giving up our tactical nukes, have removed a rung in the escalation ladder, so that's to Russia's advantage in that if there's a conventional invasion, we can't stop it with tactical nukes, so we're left with general nuclear warfare or losing.
Yeah. And he is actually, as you know, Mark, Putin has introduced a concept of de-escalation that starts with the use of theater nuclear weapons or tactical nuclear weapons, which they have, as you say, in abundance and have been modernizing to give them capabilities that I'm not sure we fully understand at the moment. Mark, there's much more to talk about Russia, needless to say, but I want to make sure that we don't deprive President-elect Trump of an understanding of another major adversary with which you are also very much seized, namely Communist China. Again, as we started with Vladimir Putin, could we start with Xi Jinping, the president of China, and what he calls the China Dream?
Well, I sort of hesitate to concentrate on individuals, because nations act in their interest. Individuals, of course, have great influence on to what extent they do.
Yeah, some more than others, for sure.
Generally, you have to look at what the basic fundamental interests of the country are, what its abilities are. And with China, obviously is so big and so powerful, and also has a historical view of itself as the leading nation of the world. And there is no question that always, from day one, that it has either wanted to dominate the all of Asia or seen itself as being deprived of that right. And we are now in a position where it is in a position to assume that right, well, once again, and it's doing it, and it's doing it very successfully. Several years ago, I was in a meeting, and among the people in the meeting was Bob Work.
Deputy Secretary of Defense.
Right. And we were talking about the South China Sea, and I said I'm sort of like the odd man out in all these things. I said, well, we've lost it. And this was 3 years ago. And he said, well, I don't think so. And, you know, and he was quite confident that we hadn't. And I was quite confident and still am that we have, because the naval geography is such that because of the choke points, and now particularly with the Philippines going into China's orbit, and the Chinese fortresses built on the sea, and the proximity of China and all its airfields to the South China Sea, and its submarine fleet, which can block both the capes, you know, the southern capes, and the entrances into the South China Sea. There's no way that if there were a full-blown naval battle that we would win in the South China Sea.
You can add to the choke points list that you've enumerated, of course, the Panama Canal, which is the vehicle for bringing parts of our naval assets, such as they are, from the Atlantic into the Pacific. Mark Helprin, I wonder what your thoughts are as you look at what I think you've really described as the China dream, restoring the Chinese hegemony in Asia for sure, and arguably quite far beyond as well. And the buildup that the Chinese have engaged in, you've mentioned their naval forces. I know you've been following their various other capabilities, particularly ballistic missile capabilities, including anti-ship ones, their nuclear forces, underground tunneling complexes to hide them, their space capabilities. When you look at all this and you put it together with the kinds of steps they're taking terrestrially, dominating choke points around the globe, is there any question in your mind that China is also preparing for conflict?
Of course. And, you know, unlike the other countries in the world that are our rivals and enemies, we are nice, and they're not nice. They think in terms of realpolitik. And also in terms of China's interests, it would be somewhat like the flip side of the mirror image of the Monroe Doctrine. They just don't want European or Western powers in their area, just the way we didn't want the Europeans to interfere in South America and Alaska. Monroe Doctrine actually was mainly for Alaska to begin with, believe it or not. If you actually read it, you see that. But we wanted this hemisphere to be ours, more or less, and keep other people out. And that's what China wants with Asia. It's perfectly understandable. The problem is that they see it as we saw it in the 19th century and early 20th century as their right. And as it happens, we have very important allies who are very close to their perimeter. Now, the question, you know, basically the most fundamentally that you can get, we have to ask ourselves this question: do we want to continue to support our far western perimeter, meaning Japan, to some extent, Taiwan, but Australia, Australasia, and it used to be the Philippines. Do we want to continue holding that line there, what the Chinese call the first island chain, or do we want to give it up? That's what the question we have to ask ourselves, and we haven't yet asked.
Which makes the defense of the second island chain, which brings them a lot closer to us, very problematic. Mark, we have to pause one more moment. We'll be right back with our continuing hour-long threat assessment and briefing for the president-elect with Mark Halperin, one of our time's great strategic thinkers, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.